Hi guys, you're now listening to part two of the 26th episode of season one of Star Trek The Next Generation, The Neutral Zone. If you have not heard part one yet, you'll want to stop and go ahead and get part one and then continue with this one, part two. Thanks for sticking it out, and we'll see you next season.
You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is The Neutral Zone. I'm James from London.
I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And the synopsis for tonight's show is, after rescuing three ancient humans from cryogenic stasis, the Enterprise is ordered to the Romulan Neutral Zone on an important mission. This is the season finale of the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original air date was the 16th of May, 1988. This episode was written by Deborah McIntyre and Mona Klee, and was directed by James Conway. Tonight's guest stars include Mark Alamo as T'Bok, Anthony James as Tei, Leon Rippey as LQ Sonny Clemens, Gracie Harrison as Claire Raymond, and Peter Mark Richman as Ralph Offenhaus.
Now let's take a break from reviewing The Neutral Zone, and why don't we talk a little bit about more forum feedback, and we left off with Skin of Evil. And we're going to start with Kieran McDuff, our number one forum guy. Thank you. Armus, the angst-ridden oil slick. What a perfect description. Two things have always bothered me about this episode. One, what was that weird mark on Tasha's head? It never looked like blood. It was far too artificial looking to be a bruise. And my other thought was that it might be part of Armus' oil slick, but that never really seemed to fit either. Yeah, they never discussed it. And I think that could have been... Actually, I think that's where he hit her. And since he's made of oil, when he slapped her, that's where he slapped her. And that's probably why she died, because of the sudden shock to her neck and her head, which is probably... She was probably dead while she was in the air. Make sense?
Yes, I know. I think so. Although later on in the feedback, Captain Proton has a theory as well.
Okay, we'll get to it. Okay, two. How come Deanna Troi couldn't talk Armus into his angsty coma?
No. So the issue here is right is that how did they manage to leave in the end? So Picard effectively talked down to Armus and got him upset, and they left and whatever. So he's just suggesting that couldn't Deanna Troi had done that rather than the captain, considering that obviously Deanna Troi had all the feedback of being empathic and whatnot.
So she should have. Well, she did tell Picard what drives him a little bit. All right, that makes sense. So two, how come Deanna Troi couldn't talk Armus into his angsty coma? Isn't that her job? Shouldn't she have been able to hit him where it hurts? No, it took Captain Picard to do that. And, yeah, it did. But she realized it and just passed that information. And continuing, still, those two issues aside, I've always rather liked this episode. The idea of killing off a main character was almost unheard of at the time, so to do it in this episode was a real shock. Sadly, with the likes of Game of Thrones, I'm not sure it's one the current generation can understand. Can you explain Game of Thrones?
So Game of Thrones is a television series on HBO, I think, or something like that. But they are notorious for killing off their characters. So people will die just out of the blue.
Oh, wow.
So it's not uncommon. So I think, I mean, by the way, this might be a slight tangent, but I mean, when we've been reviewing a lot of this stuff, we've been trying to put ourselves or think of ourselves of how we would have watched this originally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are things that obviously date the show. You know, now it's much more common to have the story arcs. Now it's also much less common to have, you know, 26 episodes a season and things like that. So a lot of these things are going to date Star Trek. And the fact that you're doing something like this, where you kill off a main character, you know, back in the day, it would have been unheard of. It would have been a big shocking event. And I think what Kieran's pointing out is that nowadays it really isn't that it's not that shocking. You will have things, either Game of Thrones or also, you know, series like 24, where there'll be, you know, major changes from mm-hmm. week to week, and it's just now part of the storytelling narrative. And I think it's difficult for us to imagine how we would have been able to react at the time, or how people growing up now would have, you know, would be able to connect to early TNG, just because really the medium of television has changed so much. So I think that's really where we're going on this.
Yeah. You know, the thing about it is that Tasha had three more episodes to go. I mean, she could now take up head of Starfleet security if they had done it right. But then again, had they not done it the way they did it, yesterday's Enterprise might not make any more sense, as well as Sela. So in the end, it had to be done the way it had to be done. So,
I mean, by the way, I'm a much bigger fan of, you know, of Tasha going the way Tasha went than, for example, of Crusher going the way Crusher may have gone. So, you know, Crusher just not turning up for season two. If that had continued, then, you know, that would have been much worse, right? So instead of getting even an episode dedicated to how she died, you basically get just a couple of lines in the first series saying, hey, she's gone off to Starfleet Medical. That's it.
Yeah. And Wesley gets to stay behind.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the absence of Crusher in the second season works because Crusher returns.
Yeah.
Had she not returned, that would be horrendous in my mind.
I think it could have been crippling to have Pulaski for six more years. No way. Don't get me wrong, I like Diana Muldaur. I just could not stand Pulaski. But, you know, she is, in many ways, she was the same as Rosalind Shays on L.A. Law. And she just puts it out there. And if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you lump it. So in a way, I do kind of respect that. And she did have some good parts in season two. So we'll talk about that. Anyway, let's go on with Kieran. But for all, Tasha was a main character in the series. I was never affected by her death. Worf, as head of security, always made more sense to me, so for her to go and him to take over just seemed like correcting an error to me. Agreed. I think the fact they killed Tasha off in season one and not later in the season probably didn't help either. Okay, this is episode 23, but there's still an argument for us only getting used to this crew. You could back that up later on now, that we know there's another six seasons after this, and it took until the third season to really hit our stride.
So I like the concept of Armus, a completely different life form than what we've used to. And it's one that's effectively imprisoned on this planet by his own kind. It's not like we haven't done this ourselves. Remember Khan. It's just a shame that Armus is so understandably angst-ridden. I'd like to see what the rest of his species is like. Now, actually, by the way, there's an episode in I think season five, which is Power Play, that Armus always reminds me of, which is when they have the it's the episode where Data, O'Brien, Troy, and is it Ro get taken over by like the dead souls of a prison ship.
Yes.
And I always, and I think it's not quite the same thing, but I'm reminded by that episode when we talk about Armus and him being effectively the collective ills of society, in a very similar way. You might describe, you know, a bunch of criminals being stranded or on a planet as being a very similar type of thing. But that's you know, that's where I go with this.
Hold on. Let's back up a second here on this. I just reread something that he says. Been effectively imprisoned on this planet by his own kind. Are you saying that does that mean you guys think that there are a bunch of oil slicks roaming the galaxy? Because I always thought this was more like humanoids that had Armus as sort of a pet. And the pet was too much to handle, so they just dumped him on this planet.
No, I actually go one step weirder. I think it's... I don't particularly care what type of alien they are, whether it's humanoid or, you know, or whatever. But this is, for sake of argument, take them as humanoid. I've always assumed that they took a piece of them out of themselves, so they were able to kind of grab whatever bad thoughts or whatever bad things were inside them, and they took it out of the entire population and they made this kind of monster. So I don't think that there are oil slicks out there. I think the oil slick is the representation of the negative thoughts or, you know, the nastiness inherent in the rest of the society.
Right. It was that whole spiel that he had about negative was in and or evil was in or something. And I'm going to see, while you continue reading, I'm going to see if I can find my notes for Skin of Evil. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. The best bit of the episode is the funeral scene, though. No sadness, just the Teletubbies Windows XP backdrop and Hollow Tasha saying her goodbyes.
Mm-hmm.
I always wondered when you'd record things like this, because I think they're a great idea, but I reckon you'd need to keep them, you'd need to update them quite often. And actually, by the way, I think in the, I think there's an episode of DS9 where they mention that they update their recordings, you know, their goodbyes. And I think it is, you know, you want something up to date, but how often do you want to update your messages to your loved ones? I mean, having said all of this, I'm sure people that are actually, you know, actively serving in the military and stuff have this as a real issue that they go through. Anyway, sorry, let me get back to this. I do agree that the ultimate payoff for this scene comes next season in The Measure of a Man, when we see the smaller version that Data has. Overall, I like this episode, even though it has a few limitations. I've read on Memory Alpha that some thought it was a disaster, but mainly because it was hard to get Amos to be convincing. I'd agree with that respect, but I wouldn't say that it was a disaster because of it. I'd maybe mark it down a bit, though. The storyline holds up well, and the impact of Tasha's death is done pretty well. So, for all that, it's a 4 out of 5 from me.
Okay, all right. And here it is. What he said was, as creatures whose beauty now dazzles all who see them, they would not exist without me. They perfected a means of bringing to the surface all that was evil and negative was in or within, erupting, spreading, connecting. In time, it formed a second skin, dank and vile. So, yeah, I mean, it just seems to me that whatever the creatures were that were on the planet, their negativity created this monster, and then they just left. So do you think that they lived on this planet at one time, or they just dumped him on this planet at one time?
I think it's much. I don't think there's a correct answer, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even if someone were to tell you that this is the correct answer, I think that's probably still a spun opinion. I take from it that he was marooned there, so he was kind of abandoned there, and they kind of, you know, they kind of dumped their stuff and then wandered off. That was my interpretation.
Okay.
But other interpretations are available and valid.
Yeah. All right, and then Captain Proton and Kieran go back and forth necessarily about how they, view this in terms of the fifth element, which I have never seen before, so I really won't know. But then we go on to Carnivore J. He says, I personally love this episode. I'm a sucker for schmaltzy scenes like the one at the end of this episode. I agree with Ben, though, that it becomes more meaningful later. The monster was fantastic. It looks really awful now. Yeah, with all this CGI tosh. What's tosh? that we have these
tosh.
Days?
Tosh means rubbish.
Okay, with all this tosh that we have these days. But I just love the icky, gooey feel of it. It grosses me out. And being a child who loved Ferngully?
Yep.
What's Ferngully?
I don't know.
Okay, well, maybe we'll find out later. Ferngully, I can totally see this oily black substance being and the embodiment of evil. Yes, they just need some Tone Loc in the background. I apologize for now for the reference, but it probably does not resonate much with you guys or your listeners. But it struck me. What can I do? Okay, is he referring to maybe Armus is a funky cold Medina? I'm not exactly sure what he means by the Tone Loc in the background. Never mind. Can't believe I just did that. I give this episode a spectacular 5 angsty oil slicks, and the podcast gets the same. Thank you. Thanks for all the hard work, fellas. Keep it up. P.S. Doc, I love your Science Corner segments. I hope we have many more to look forward to. If it isn't the sciencey stuff, it's the difference in our culture stuff that they love. When you teach me a little bit of something about what you do and or your area, and I teach you a little something about us. And, we just did it last time when I brought out my tangent about life on Mars, a BBC version versus the US version. And I hope that we can get you to check out Big Bang Theory.
Oh, who, me?
Yes, you.
There are so many people that are forcing me to do so, and I've been told categorically that I will enjoy it. And my sister, by the way, my sister's not a nerd, but she basically thinks it's a. She says that I will see a lot of myself in it, so we will see.
How about this then? What if we have a watch party? You and me. We just get together and we watch Big Bang Theory and we can do a commentary on it while we're talking.
Okay, sure.
Okay, Ferngully. The only thing I could see is it looks like some kind of cartoon. Kind of like an Aladdin thing. The Last Rainforest, 1992. Ferngully, The Last Rainforest, 1992. I don't see the reference. But maybe he'll explain that in this review. Okay. So Captain Proton follows up with, oh man, Ferngully, I can't believe you pulled that out of your back pocket. So obviously they know more than we do. In many ways, this first season is a lot like TOX Redux. What's a Redux?
Just redo.
Oh, redo. Oh, redo. Oh, ducks. Kind of like French do. Oh, yeah. God. And this episode... and this episode is the TNG version of Arena. Both being immortalizing monster movies. And even if they reveal the monster early in this episode, I'm glad the episode still holds up for you. So, and he's talking about Carnivore Jays 5. So, Ben, they backed you up with that 5.
No, they certainly did. By the way, I was completely out of step on Skin of Evil. It is clear. I think people like it a lot more than I seem to. I don't want to start a fight with Ben.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's not Arena quality.
Yeah, I don't know about Arena quality either. I mean, I think it may seem that it's somewhat like it, but not even close, because there was no fighting. I mean, if we're talking about the Gorn, no. These are two separate things all together, completely. But again, like you say, we have a pretty good relationship with the Delta Quadrant, so we don't want to ruin that. So you're right, Ben. You're right.
I'm heading over to 10 forward. I think by the time this hits, it probably will be in a couple of weeks. So it's still a little while away. But I'm having a debate with Ben about a Well, so what they brought me on for is because they asked me to come on to do my Desert Island Trek, which I did. And during the discussion that we had, I happened to mention that, in my opinion, Dr. Bashir is the best male character on Deep Space Nine. That's the statement that I made, and I got called out on it by Ben, who claims and will be defending that no, Quark is the best male character on Deep Space Nine.
I think you're both wrong. I mean, for me, it's a toss-up between Weyoun and Garak.
Okay, I'm not too sure that you can have... I don't think you can have guest stars as best characters.
But Garak isn't a guest star. I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's pretty permanent. I'd say Garak is probably more permanent than Nog was.
No, sure. I think that's true. And I happen to like... I think I happen to like Dr. Bashir a lot. I think that what they did with Dr. Bashir was very, very good.
Yes, until his genetic enhancing came out. And then I got sick of it.
I don't want to I don't want to give Ben too many secrets of my line of defense that I'm going to take, because I kind of made the statement rather in haste. But I think the issue about the genetic enhancement, I think is really a, in the way that it was brought up, I think it's a real social commentary on the idea of parents kind of like pushing their kids into things that they aren't suited for or aren't interested in. And I think that it is... I like the storyline. I think the storyline works. I know that they didn't know from day one that he was genetically engineered. I certainly didn't want them to turn it into the fact that now, you know, the doctor's a superhuman that can beat everyone up and he's kind of, you know, 50 times stronger than anyone. And by and large, they stayed away from that. But I do like the allegory of, you know, what do you do when your kid is, you know, not as smart as others, and how much pressure do you put on your kids in order to achieve in the manner that you believe that they should achieve? And I personally quite like that story.
Right. I do too. I love the genetic enhancement story when he finally comes out of the genetic enhancement closet. What I'm talking about is the subsequent references to it. It drove me crazy. You're genetically enhanced. You have to stand back here. Oh, you're genetically enhanced. What do you think about this? Oh, you're genetic enhanced. And it started to drive me crazy. It began to get old.
No, certainly. And the idea that, I mean, by the way, one of the big issues that I have with certainly Into Darkness is that I never saw Khan, and obviously Khan being genetically enhanced, and so I never saw Khan as being a... I know they do use the term superhuman, even in Space Seed. You know, I accept that they do that, but I always felt that it was, you know, it was you took a top-notch human in terms of intellect, in terms of physical specimen, and you kind of maybe made him like 120% of that. So you gave him the edge. But I always don't like it when they, instead of doing 110% or 120%, which means you're well above everyone else you're ever going to see, they go silly and they go, we're going to go to 5,000% and we'll have a superhuman that can take out 50 guys. At that point, it just becomes ridiculous. And that was one of the big issues I had with Into Darkness, because I think they kind of, you know, I never felt that Khan would be able to take the beating that he got from Spock. And I never felt that, you know, I certainly didn't want Bashir to turn into this guy that all of a sudden was, you know, was physically stronger, when it's been shown that he's not physically stronger or that he's like an absolute genius. Now, he's a clever guy, of course he is, but I didn't want the genetic engineering to change him into like, you know, into superhuman territory. And I think they, you know, I thought they did okay. I think there are cases where they're a bit guilty of playing that card one too many times, maybe. But overall, I'm quite a Bashir fan.
Well, you know something that's interesting? When we're done here, what are we going to do? That's the question we have a couple of 2-3 years to answer. Part of me thinks that I would hate to see us just say goodbye. And I'm thinking that, you know, maybe we could go on to a DS9 review. We'll cross that bridge, but of course we have the Wilderness already. And, you know, their run will be done by the time we could possibly do another DS9 run. And maybe, you know, I wonder if people would want that kind of perspective from someone else that isn't the Wilderness. So, but that's, you know, something we can talk to, we can deal with in a couple of years.
Hey, by the way, my opinion, and this is, I actually quite like where Trek is at now in terms of the volume of Trek. Mm-hmm. What you do, you can choose to start anywhere in Trek, whether it's start at DS9, start at Voyager, start at the original, or start at Enterprise, or whatever. Just start where you start, watch it all, move on to the next, watch it all, move on to the next, watch it all. By the time you've got to the end, you're more than happy to start right at the beginning again.
Yes.
Because there's enough there, basically, to keep you going forever. So we should do this, followed by DS9, then Voyager, then Enterprise, then the original series, and then back to TNG. And it will be as fresh in that, it will be as fresh in 12 years' time as it is now.
Can you imagine? And we won't, 12 years we doing it again.
We won't remember anything that we said, and we won't remember the episode. No. We'll probably have a different opinion on it. But the great thing about the vast amount of stuff that there is out there is that you can effectively do this, right?
Yeah.
There's more than enough to keep you going ad infinitum.
Right. Because, you know, it'd be very interesting to see our perspective of DS9 versus the Wilderness and our perspective of Voyager versus the Delta Quadrant. There's a lot of things in the Delta Quadrant that they talk about on Voyager that I completely agree with, but there are others that I think they're just too harsh. And, you know, and I'm not calling them out. Same thing with the Wilderness. Same thing with previously in the Alpha Quadrant. Everybody's got their own opinions, and that's why I say we can redo these someday, and I hope TrekMate would be willing to do that. But again, we'll cross that bridge in 2-3 years. I'm just hoping we stick around that long.
And if not us, our kids.
Yes. Yes, I want my daughter to carry on this if I don't survive. Can you imagine doing the show with her? She hates Star Trek. Hates it. Doesn't have a clue what it's about.
As I mentioned when I spoke to her, you know, she doesn't watch Star Trek yet.
No, she's never going to. There's no One Direction in Star Trek. Now, if I said that One Direction appears in one of the episodes and she's got to watch them all to find it, well, maybe. But then she'll get to the end and say, "You lied to me." Oh, yeah, that's what daddies do sometimes. So, okay, guys. And now let's go back. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think we've got good luck editing this.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so let's go back into... I did it again. Let's go back into the neutral zone.
Now, there's something that I think we've probably jumped over that I did notice, and it's not integral to either the show or to the podcast, but let me just put it out there. There's a bit where Picard is meeting with, and I believe it's Data, Geordi, and Riker, but it might be Data, Worf, and Riker, or whoever. And he's meeting with them in his ready room. And everyone is sat down at his desk, and he enters the room from behind where the fish tank is. So he kind of, this is a scene where he gets called by the guy from the 20th century, and he gets annoyed and he ends up walking down. But if you look how Picard enters that scene, he enters from behind the fish tank, and I was under the impression that behind the fish tank was his personal WC. And I quite like the fact that if that is true, then he's effectively walking in onto his own meeting after basically having done his personal business.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yep, I'm watching that. Yeah, he walks in as if it's Worf, Data. Actually, it's all of them. Worf, Data. Worf, Data, Geordi, and Riker. And he walks in, and they're all just sitting there, like, "He did tell
you. You took your time."
Yeah. Did everything come out in the end? What's a personal? Okay, this is gonna sound stupid, but what's a personal WC? I don't know what a WC means. Obviously, WC. It's the head.
Water closet, as in the loo.
Oh, the me. Yes, I now understand. I've never heard of a water closet.
I don't think anyone would refer to it in those words anymore, but WC is the standard kind of initialism that goes on, toilet doors.
Yes, got it. And where does the loo come from? I'm not sure I want to retain this.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I really don't know.
So that show I've had for the last 5 years is called The Bathroom Trek Show? Okay.
It's a different spelling.
Oh, okay. That doesn't matter. Anyway, now what do you think of Troy and her description of the Romulans, or her briefing of the Romulans, which I'm surprised Picard didn't already have access to. But I thought she did very good in explaining the Romulans, creatures of extremes and so on.
Yeah, no, actually, I think, despite me just a second ago saying that Troy should have been put on with these people to help them through their troubles, I think that Troy does have a much more important role on the ship, and realistically, she should have been doing this, the Romulan stuff, and she should have had like a junior to look after these people. But I think she does well, and she's asked at the beginning of the show, what information is there out there, and she also, she pushes back very quickly, saying, look, we probably have very, very little information. And I think that's good. And I also think when she comes back and she tells, Picard stuff, then, I think her role is decent in that respect. I don't think there's anything that she brings to the table is earth-shattering, but I think that it's kind of the role that she behaves in the way that I would expect the counselor or kind of the ambassadorish officer, the diplomatic relations officer to act on the show. Oh. And having, we're now at the end of season one, right? And I am not sure that I see where the Troy hatred comes from. I think she's had a very good season, all things considered. I think I think she's done well on a lot of stuff. She's been given a lot of stuff. She's, we spoke earlier about the feedback on Arsenal of Freedom. She did well in that episode. She's done a lot of, I think she's done a lot of good stuff. I don't think she's been overused on the ouch, I've got a headache. What can I tell you about things that you don't really know? So I think in season one, certainly, I think Troy has been predominantly well written, and that's something that's rather surprising.
Right. Yeah, I think she was better than I remember. Like you say, it was I've got a headache, and they're angry with us, as whoever it is that she's talking about is lobbing torpedoes at us. Yeah, no kidding. But yes, there are some ways that she was pretty good. Okay. And I had no idea what the QE2 was, and that's a reference to a passenger liner. And as I look at that on Memory Alpha, it's called the RMS Queen Elizabeth II.
Yes, you didn't know what it was?
Nope.
That's, wow. But it's just a cruise liner that goes across the Atlantic, and other places, I'm sure. A bit like the Titanic.
Only with better luck.
Yes.
All right. Well, obviously, it's a more efficient operation, obviously. But where does the QE2 port out of?
In England?
Is it in England?
I would have thought it goes out of Portsmouth into, to various places around the world. I would have thought. I think it heads over to Australia and to the US. But I think most of them in England would leave from Portsmouth, which is on the south coast, or Southampton.
Okay. Is it its own company, how we would have Carnival Cruise Lines or...
No, I think it's owned by one of the big companies now.
Oh, okay.
It's not like a state-owned, single entity or anything like that. It will be a cruise line that's been that the company itself would be relatively prestigious, otherwise they wouldn't be able to name it after the Queen. But it wouldn't, I think it would just be a company.
All right, so anyway, as I mentioned earlier, Sonny asks Data if he wants to throw a party, and tries to get his hands on a guitar, while he can still remember the chords. And then Data is called away for the neutral zone deal, but Sonny can tell that there's something in Data's face that isn't normal. And we won't be inviting these Romulans to our party, will we? Most definitely not. Okay. So we arrive to the neutral zone and we find that outpost Delta 05 has gone. Is gone. Nothing left. It's like a great force has scooped it off the face of the planet. Next thing with Terran 9 is another outpost that got scooped up as well. So here's the thing. When you're number one and your chief of security or your tactical officer says, I think we should go to red alert, maybe we should even go to battle stations, who do you think was right, Picard or Riker and Worf?
I mean, I think in this case, I think Picard's in the wrong. I'm very surprised that he... I mean, in a way, it's not even that there's a diplomatic issue, that he's trying to show that he's been... He's not trying to show that he doesn't trust another person on the other side of the viewer or anything like that. At this point, you know, either something's going to happen and they really should be prepared for it, or there's nothing there, at which point there's no real downside for being prepared. Okay. So I was on Riker and Worf's side on this point.
I kind of set you up for that, actually.
Okay.
Because remember, in the briefing, there were counterpunchers. They're going to wait for you to commit yourself before the Romulans actually do anything. And so that's why I think, you know, settling for yellow alert, it's kind of defensive, but not overly defensive. And, you know, everybody wanted to fire on the Romulans as they started to decloak. You know, this is our only time. This is, we can get them. And I think that's when Picard is realizing force will be met with counterforce. So if we immediately go to battle stations, that could force the Romulans to overreact and start firing on us. So in a sense, I went in this thinking, why would they, you know, why not take their counsel? But on the other hand, it makes perfect sense considering the briefing he just received.
Okay, Lou, I'm going to admit two things now. One, Captain Picard is a better captain than I am. That's the first thing, because I think you're absolutely right on this. And then the second thing is that you've noticed something in this episode that I didn't notice, and I'm actually going to give this extra credit for the write-in, because I didn't see this. But it is entirely there, you're right. That this is very clearly following on from the briefing he just received.
Yep. But yeah, like I say, I was watching this thinking, you know, I agreed with Riker. We should have probably gone to red alert and had everybody ready. Because what if the Romulans decided to... Here's another thing. The information we have on them is out of date. Well, the information they have on us is out of date. So how do we know that this particular Romulan commander isn't the type to shoot first and ask questions later? I would have probably been on red alert. But, again, Picard got this whole counterpuncher thing, so we'll let it go. Okay. Do you think the turbolift needs an executive key? How in the world can somebody who's not even a Starfleet officer can tap a panel or find their way onto a turbolift and say, where would the captain be? Oh, you want to know where the captain is? He's on the bridge. Oh, well, then take me to the bridge. And those are two things that should never have happened. It should have taken him to security and deposited in him.
So if you go into the turbolift and say, you know, take me to the captain, so the computer scans you, sees whether or not you're a member of Starfleet, and if you're not, takes you directly to the brig.
Yes.
I quite like that idea. I mean, having said that, like, I'm not going to get too mad, although I do know that a lot of people end up on the bridge that shouldn't be on the bridge. Mm-hmm. Just by wandering onto the bridge.
Beaming onto the bridge. You got an enemy across from you beaming onto your bridge. Oh man, this can't happen. But he finds his way to the bridge so he can deliver the line, who the hell are they? Okay. Yeah, for, you know, I wrote down for a 20th century hick, Ralph Offenhaus had some pretty good insights of what the Romulans were thinking.
No, that is true. But actually, one thing I think we need to acknowledge here before we move on is that the Warbird is a pretty impressive design of the ship. And I'm you know, this obviously stays in Star Trek for the next 15 years or whatever it is. But it's a very well done ship for, you know, considering that it was put together and designed in season one. I think it looks very nice. Oh, and it stays throughout, right? It stays throughout all of the Next Generation era. And right. I think it's much nicer than a lot of, I mean, but I don't want to hate on any of the recent films, but it, you know, if you compare it to the design of the design of the Romulan ship that ends up in Star Trek 09 or something like that, it's no comparison. This is a wonderful, beautifully created ship that is just so ergonomically perfection. Mm-hmm. And it's also a huge ship that you get to see. This is that they show it to you next to the Enterprise. There's probably a bit of perspective going on, but it looks as if, you know, the Galaxy class starship, which is this wonderful piece of tech that we've been told is the top of the range, could fit inside the hole that the Warbird has inside of itself. And you kind of think, you know, this is something else in terms of battleships we've come across so far.
Oh,
so
you were
certainly giving a kudos out to whoever put this together.
You are so right. I'm looking at them side right in front of each other, and yeah, you're right. The entire Enterprise D could fit in the little tiny space that's behind the Romulans' nacelle. So, I mean, obviously, this thing is at least 20 times larger than the Enterprise. How in the heck are we going to stop that? Oh, that was too easy. But that's a different episode.
And this becomes an iconic ship, right, for the TNG era.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, this and the Borg cube, and you know, a couple of others. But this is a recognizable ship from the franchise that you don't need to know about Star Trek to know that this is a Star Trek ship.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, so the humans from the past are going back to Earth, and Sonny, like I said, offers Data to join him in a musical group. He'd be one hell of a side man. No thanks. But, okay, so what do you think of the last words from the Romulans? We are back. And then fade.
Well, actually, two things. I think that the entire encounter with the Romulans, it's kind of, you know, not a huge amount is said, right? I think they're very much, you know, we'll introduce the Romulans, we'll have them on there, but there's no commitment to any kind of a real development. So it's pretty much, you know, the only stuff that goes on, I suppose, is that, you know, Worf starts having a go at them, saying, you know, they're Romulans, they're without honor, and it's clear that this is going to be an antagonist coming into the series. But other than that, I think that there's not a huge amount to say about their interaction. I like the fact that the Romulans are brought back, because I think that, not necessarily the Romulans from the original series, but I think that how these guys go on in the future in TNG is good. But unless I'm very much mistaken, do we not? You know, I don't think we see a Romulan vessel in. Do we see a Romulan vessel in the second season? I don't think they come back into the enemy. You know, the enemy, the defector kind of stuff that goes on in season three. You know, maybe I'm missing one, but we really don't see Romulans until season three, season four.
I think you're right. Because as I look through the list, I can't imagine any time that there would have been a Romulan ship involved.
I think there's one. Isn't there one in the... I think that there's a Warbird in Peak Performance. They have a sensor echo of a Warbird. And I think there's also a Warbird in... Is it Booby Trap or is it one similar to Booby Trap? I think, but it's not interactions with Romulans in the same way. I think it's just more passing references or stuff like that. So I think, you know, really, I think the Romulan stuff gets going in season three, and you know, season three, and then goes throughout season three and season four as you lead up into the Klingon Civil War.
Right. Yeah, the enemy is the first one I can think of. That's season 3, episode 7. So, and that looks like it will be in May of 2015.
So. You've got a spreadsheet.
Yes, I do.
Excellent.
Yes, yes. Okay, yeah, because we start season 3 on February 28th. That's if we keep everything as it is today. That won't happen. Things will change. It always does. Okay, well, unless you have anything else, I think it's time to go on to our final thoughts.
No, I'm pretty much ready to go.
All right, why don't you kick it off?
Okay, it's now time to give a rating for this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Now, actually, as I mentioned, I did enjoy this episode, but it's not a good episode. I think that's true. I think that the two plot lines, I don't think they connect particularly well, and I don't really care for the plot line about the humans from the past. I think it's a nice introduction it's not a nice introduction at all to the Romulans, but it's nice that we're introduced or reintroduced to the Romulans. So I think it's nice that it tees up stuff for the future. But in this particular episode, I mean, other than a couple of lines here and there and the introduction of the Romulan warbird, I really can't see a huge amount of positives. I'm kind of going to give this one, it's somewhere between a 2 and a 3 in my mind. I'm going to be harsh and give it a 2. I just don't think it's quite up to standard to be a mid-ranking episode of TNG. Now, how about you, Lou?
Okay. Well, not enough of the Romulans. It was too much of the fish-out-of-water humans from the past. They seem to be cardboard cutouts of what we would be like if we woke up on that ship someday. Although that'd be interesting. And, you know, the thought of, like I said, Brian waking up in the 24th century, I think that would be so fascinating. And him not only finding out about his, you know, the past history that he's missed out on these 370 years, I'd be willing to bet he would want to know what the Lou Trek Show did. And so I think that's kind of cute. But that's neither here nor there to this episode. The buildup of the Romulans was more fearful than the actual two that we really saw, minus the We Are Back. The We Are Back seemed to be pretty chilling. It doesn't compare to the They Will Be Coming moment that we get in Season 2, but we are back. And now we look at it, we know Mark Alamo will be back in a couple different iterations on Star Trek. So when Mark Alamo delivers that we are back, you tend to take it a little more serious. Most notably, Gul Dukat. Future Romulan episodes will be in some way good, in some way sometime lame. Like, for instance, the Geordi and Ro is invisible thing. I don't know. I really didn't give too much care about. But this one here, the build-up to the Romulans is all we had going for it. The trip from the past, yeah, okay. I could see a little bit of humor in the fish out of water. He wants to get his lawyer in the law firm because, obviously, you don't know how much money he's actually lost over the years. They don't really say that. But in the end, it's just... you're right. I'm thinking more like a 2.5. So somewhere not quite in the middle, but yeah, I thought 2.5 is what I thought of at best. So, and that is all, guys, for Season 1. We are officially done for Season 1. So, before we go into the finals, Let's reflect on Season 1 if we could. I don't really, as I look through my list here, I can kind of give you an idea of what we gave each episode. Okay. So for instance, when it came to ones, I had two of them, but I had a 1.5. So I don't know if that's counted as a 1. James, on the other hand, you had only 2 ones. Mine were Angel 1, Too Short a Season, and my 1.5 was Home Soil. Which, the way I ragged on that one, I can't believe I didn't give that a 0.5. And your ones were Hiding Q and Angel 1.
No, so, I must have given none of that.
Code of Honor.
Code of Honor.
There you go. So we're 3 and I guess 3, 1.5 at close to 3, or 1. So, thinking back to the season, do you believe Code of Honor, Hide and Q, and Angel One are still ones? Or is there anything you want to reflectively change on the record?
Okay, I think that Code of Honor is a one. I do think that, and I think that Angel One is a one. Mm-hmm. I think Angel One, by the way, suffers very much that it's it kind of is a bad episode in a run of relatively good episodes. To be honest, I think that the writing got stronger. I think that, you know, I actually liked Haven. I thought Haven was a good character episode. The big goodbye is there. Datalaw is there. 110-1101 is there. I think they're all kind of solid episodes. And Angel One was just a really silly, poorly written thing in the middle. So I think that in particular is not good. Now, Hide and Q. Was I too harsh on Hide and Q? Because I think a lot of people would probably believe that I am. I think that, you know, possibly, but I was a little bit harsh. But I certainly, I didn't like the way that they were, the direction they were trying to take, or the direction that it appeared that they were going in. Hide and Q really suffers from them attempting to have a relationship between Q and anyone else on the show. And I think Q only works when it's Q against Picard. And the Hide and Q axis is Q versus Riker. And then what does Riker do? And that really wound me up terribly. So despite the fact that I think I was probably harsh on the episode, I'm keeping that one at one as well.
Okay. And like I said, mine were Angel One, which we agreed on, and Too Short a Season.
Too Short a Season's the one with Admiral Jameson and the weapons and the Fountain of Eden story.
Yeah, you gave it a 2.
I gave it a 2. It's not very well executed.
No.
I, of course it's not.
No. But at the time, here's the deal. We didn't run across Paula, who, you know, pretty much made us realize is that 0.5s, there's no reason why you couldn't have a 0.5. So actually, that there, I probably will change to a 1.5. I'll give it a little bit better. Okay. So now our season 2 episode, and so now our number 2, oh god, that was worse. And so now our number, our 2 rate, so now our 2 ratings for season 1. Mine were Code of Honor, The Last Outpost, Lonely Among Us, Hide and Q, The Big Goodbye, and that's it. Those were my 2s. Yours were Lonely Among Us, Too Short a Season, Symbiosis, We'll Always Have Paris, Conspiracy, and The Neutral Zone.
Not Conspiracy.
Okay, 2. What'd you give it?
So you did not give it a 2.
You didn't?
I gave it a 5.
You gave it a 5?
Conspiracy.
I must have typed the wrong thing. Yeah, that's the one we just did. What am I thinking? That's right, you did give it a 5. Okay, I typed the wrong thing, sorry. So, does the record stand for the other 2s?
I think so, yeah. I think that sounds, those sound right.
Okay.
I think I've got harsher as the season's gone on. Because I think at the beginning of the season, I was, you know, I gave things like, yeah, Last Outpost. I also gave things like, you know, even Justice and The Battle and stuff, which are not great episodes. They were getting, when an episode was meh, it was getting like a 3. Whereas yeah. I think towards the end of the season, when an episode was meh, which in my opinion, Symbiosis would always have Paris in particular falls into, and as we've just done the Neutral Zone, I'm becoming a little bit harsher. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I do think that there is a, you know, I think expectations should be a little bit higher, you know, now that we've got a year worth of character development. Mm-hmm. And people have put out very good stuff in the first season. That there's definitely decent stuff there. And I don't think you should be falling into the traps that some of the early episodes would probably be forgiven to fall into. So I think it's probably right that I'm getting a little bit harsher.
Okay. All right. 3 stars. They consist, we pretty much, we didn't always agree on 3 stars, but the first two, Encounter at Farpoint 1 and 2, is what I think averaged out to a 3. I don't remember what they exactly were for part 1 and part 2, but I know that the outcome resulted in a 3. The Naked Now, we did as 3s. You gave The Last Outpost a 3, as well as Justice. We both gave The Battle a 3, Haven a 3. You gave The Big Goodbye a 3. We agreed on When the Bow Breaks as a 3. Everyone agreed on Coming of Age, where Furbob, you and I also gave 3s. Let's see what else. You had a 3 for Skin of Evil. And my last 3 after that was Symbiosis, or not after that, but Symbiosis, and We'll Always Have Paris.
And the Neutral Zone, right? You've just given this one a 3.
No, I gave it a 2.5.
Okay.
Yeah, 2.5, and you gave it a 2.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're good with the record on that one? Nothing else that you want to consider?
No, I think we're good on that. Yeah. I think we're good on that.
Okay, 4s. You gave more 4s than I think I did. I'm not sure yet. As you can tell, I really didn't plan this part. So I gave one to Where No One Has Gone Before. You gave that one a 5. Justice, I gave that a 4. You gave it a 3. Data Lore, you gave it a 4. I gave it a 3. You gave a 4 to 11001001. I gave it a 3 as well. We both agreed on Heart of Glory as a 4. The Arsenal of Freedom, you gave a 4, and I gave it a 3.5. And then I gave Skin of Evil a 4, whereas you gave it a 3. And then Conspiracy got a 4.5, and you gave that one a 5. So, how did our guests do? Okay. There are no 1s. There was 1 2. That was for We'll Always Have Paris. That was from Paul Finch. On 3s, there was only 1 3, and that came from Furbob for Coming of Age. There were 2 3.5s. One was for Data Lore. Now, that was an average, by the way, I should mention. Sean gave it a 3, and Bridget gave it a 4. So I kind of put that as a 3.5 for the both of them and called it a 3.5. And then Paula gave Home Soil a 3.5 as well. Thor's came from Blair, who did The Arsenal of Freedom, and Ben, who did Skin of Evil. And that's after Ben says all of TNG gets 5s. 4.5 went to Where No One Has Gone Before, and that's also an average. Mark Stamper gave it a 4, and Paul Finch gave it a 5. So I figured that comes out to about a 4.5. And the only 5 came from the last episode from Colin on Conspiracy. So how did we add up? I gave it a total of 70.5 points for the whole season, which for 26 seasons comes out to 2.71. You did a little better than me. You gave it 72 points, which for 26 episodes comes out to 2.77. But our guest beat us. They gave it a total of 32.5 out of 9 episodes that we had guests for a 3.61. Now, isn't that fascinating?
Although I could have known the run-in scores, of course, because I'm always here when we record. I actually do not keep track of what you give the episodes, Lou. So I'm not trying to, get one up on you or be under you or over you or anything like that. I thought on the last couple of weeks, because I think I've been harsher, I thought on the last couple of weeks I might have fallen below your level. And I'm glad to see that I haven't.
Yeah,
because I do have I have a reputation to consider on this. I am an apologist. I think the Trek is great.
Right.
I think the first season, yes, there's a lot of dud stuff out there, but the episodes that that we've kind of collectively enjoyed, you know, not necessarily given 5 stars, but, you know, there's good stuff out there. You know, we've even in the back end of the season, we've, you know, with Conspiracy, with Arsenal of Freedom, Heart of Glory, we've had a good, you know, a good set of episodes here.
Right.
And I think it's been I don't think season one is as bad as its reputation suggests it is.
And you know something I should mention as well, when I say our guests gave it an average of 3.61 when we were in the 2.7s, let's keep in mind the guests only wanted to appear on the good episodes. There was no one here for The Battle or, you know, Angel One. Nobody wanted on the show at this, so we don't know how they would have rated. So, you know, given a 3.61 really isn't fair because, you know, it's only selective bias, whereas we did the entire series run for season one, and that's more objective.
No, I have to say, I think that everyone that has come on so far has come on for episodes that they like.
Right.
I think with the exception of Paul coming on for We'll Always Have Paris, he basically just emailed me and said, hey, what are you doing next? Mm-hmm. And it happened to be that episode. I think he gave it a 2 for We'll Always Have Paris. But other than that, I think everyone's coming on for shows that they enjoy and they, you know, and they wanted specifically to speak about.
Right. And it was fun for episode 6 when we had Mark on and we just popped Paul on for no reason. And that was quite a bit of fun. I mean, Mark knew it was Paul within 2 seconds. He had to say a couple sentences. I'd say that first sentence, few words, and boom, he knew it was Paul. What the hell are you doing here? I believe was his words. So, yeah, that was fun. Okay, so what did we like? What did you like best about season one? The fact that I like the fact that we just got a new series. I was really, at the beginning, hated it. Didn't like the idea, but go on.
Remember me that, you know, I revisited season one. I never saw season one, that's not necessarily true. I think that I watched Trek, TNG in particular. I think I caught the season one episodes first. So I think I've got memories of watching Code of Honor, Where No One Has Gone Before, Data Law in particular, Skin of Evil, things like that. I remember seeing them very, very young. But I certainly didn't watch through season one and have any knowledge of season one. It was only, you know, I only acknowledged season one when I came back to Trek, you know, came back to Star Trek and started looking from the beginning. And that was probably, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line after I had got into, you know, seasons. Well, I think towards the season 3, season 4 kind of range. So I was, you know, I kind of revisited this. Well, it's more correct to say I viewed season 1 in its entirety after having watched season 4. So I know season 1 gets a lot of bad rep. I think that there's some good stuff in there. I think there's stuff that's very clunky, but I don't think it's a complete write-off.
No.
And in particular, I mean, I have mentioned before, and you know, it's been brought up, you know, I really enjoy the Where No One Has Gone Before episode, and I think it really is episodes like this that kind of allowed me as a child to connect into sci-fi, because it's the kind of questions it raises and the kind of possibilities it puts on the table is, well, first of all, it's that kind of storytelling is not happening elsewhere, and certainly wasn't happening elsewhere in the late 80s. And it's the stuff that really kind of sparked my imagination. And you know, as I've mentioned before, I kind of, you know, I wasn't introduced to Star Trek by anyone, you know, my parents or anything like that. I'm the only Trekkie in the family kind of thing. I kind of stumbled onto this, and I really thought that a lot of this type of storytelling was great. And I really wouldn't be the person I am today if I wasn't able to latch onto this. So I really have a hard time, you know, I know season one isn't the greatest season. I have a hard time to say that it's not worth watching. I really do.
Well, of course, you got to have it. I mean, Yeah, I mean, none of these actors knew each other before this, and they're all learning each other. The writers didn't know what each actor would be good for or what they could possibly handle, so obviously there's now 26 episodes of backstory that we get to feed off of. The only new character would be Dr. Pulaski, and so we have to build some backstory for her. One particular story I really am not a fan of, but, you know, I've talked about it, and you, if you don't know what it is, we'll find out next season.
It's so unfortunate, by the way, that it's so unfortunate Gates McFadden now leaves the series for a year. Thankfully, it's only for a year. But you could tell the type of relationship that they were building, or the type of, I think that Dr. Crusher had the most developed relationship with the captain. And although I'm not a fan of them being linked kind of romantically or whatever, but I do think that their relationship was a complicated and good one. And really, it's unfortunate that effectively the kind of character development we've had throughout the first season really does get put on hold and, you know, not really revisited until I don't think it gets restarted in season three. I don't think it does. I think it takes a long time for this to build back up again once Gates McFadden rejoins in season three. So I'm really not a big fan of the fact that she left.
Yeah, I think other than an episode where they finally get together and, you know, why didn't you tell me how you feel? Yes, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to tell my best friend that I'm in love with his wife. And beyond that, I believe it really doesn't come out again until All Good Things. So, and then that is a possible alternate future, I guess you could say. So, okay. All right, and the Enterprise D. Obviously, it's a whole lot better than the Enterprise or A, the bloody ABC thing. Holodecks, replicators are better. I mean, they can replicate anything, whereas in the original series, you had to have a little disc, and that's all it could do was what was on that disc. Right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Okay. So I've enjoyed doing season one, and I tell you something, I love the forum feedback. I hope that more people will do the forum feedback for us. Kieran McDuff has been invaluable this season.
Give that man a promotion.
Absolutely. So Captain McDuff, thank you. We appreciate the feedback, and we really do hope to see more, for season two. Let's see here. Hopefully, we'll be back here in a little bit. Hopefully the doctor here won't decide to head up Starfleet Medical and I have to try and find a replacement for a year. Because I don't know if I could do this without you, Doc.
Well, I certainly couldn't do this without you. I as I've mentioned before, I kind of turn up to chat about Star Trek once a week, and you happen to be recording it, so I don't learn my lesson.
So I'm looking forward to season two, and that's pretty much all I have to say. So please let us know in the feedback what you're looking forward to in season two, what you think about season one, how you would rate the entire season, and I guess that's that. Anything else you want to add, Doc?
To be honest, no, not really. Other than the fact that I think that, I'll put out there that I think we really enjoyed having the guests come on. And it's always good to hear from people that, and if anyone's listening and they do think that they want to, they'd like to come on, please do. It's very likely that that we'll be able to accommodate that, and you can come on and tell us what you like about any specific Trek episode you happen to come on for.
Right. Right now I've got Where Silence Has Lease. Nobody's on there, so you've got it. Paul Wright's got Elementary Dear Data. So go ahead. And we will bring up forum feedback for Conspiracy in the Neutral Zone in the next season.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Counselor Troy will have her baby in about 36 hours.
News of an alien pregnancy alarms the crew.
Something which I can only describe as a presence
entered my body.
Could this mysterious entity pose a deadly threat?
Destroy it now.
Ian, no!
Diana Muldoon, Whoopi Goldberg join the crew of Star Trek The Next Generation.
So join us on September 26th as we review Episode 1 of Season 2 in Star Trek The Next Generation, The Child. I've been Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London. And thank you very much for joining us on this journey.
It's been wonderful, guys. Thank you. We love you all.